Hello, listeners. Welcome back and happy Juneteenth. This is episode 4 of Unbound. Sep for churnin' days, I stay in the kitchen helping Aunt Tempe. I peel taters into a bucket and scrape all the brown off the carrots. We work quiet because the missus don't like noise and gets headaches most every day. If Aunt Tempe burns the bread and sputters too loud, or I squeal at a weevil what's burrowed in a carrot, we hear the missus bustle through the walkway into the kitchen. "Perhaps you do better farther south," she says to Aunt Tempe. "Perhaps a whippin' will make you braver," she says to me. How does whippin' make a body brave? I wonder, but I clamp my mouth shut so no words escape. My favorite day is Sunday. Even though there's more work because dinner's earlier and Master stays home reflecting on what the preacher tells him is holy thoughts, and the missus wants us looking extra busy. But I don't mind, because when Master's thinking his holy church thoughts, I'm reflecting on my visit with Mama. One Sunday morning, before they leave for church, the missus comes into the kitchen directing Aunt Tempe about some spot on a silver spoon. I'm opening a yellow squash and remembering Willie's sweet smile when I gave him my muffin surprise. Now they don't see me so much. Mama don't shush them back to sleep if they wake up when I visit. I'm just about to scoop out the insides of the squash when a pale green worm, big as my thumb, uncurls its resting body, and I squeak. The missus walks over. "Afraid of a worm?" she asks. "No, ma'am, just startled." "Well, perhaps that whipping we talked about will make you braver," she says, turning to leave. Whipping don't make you brave, I think, but this time, without any warning, my thoughts spill into sound. I cover my mouth and hope the missus don't hear, but she turns right round in those pretty cloth shoes and looks at me with red-hot flames flickering in her eyes. Before I can look down, her fingers flash across my cheek like broom whiskers what's on fire. "Put those haughty eyes down," she says. "If I weren't going to church, I'd send you for a whipping." I put my eyes down and hold back the tears, what burn almost as much as the missus's fingers what crossed my face. Aunt Tempe brings me a new squash, but don't say nothing till we hear Master Allen and the missus leave for church. "Grace," she finally says, "I know your daddy told you." "He's not my daddy," I say, tears spilling from my eyes. Aunt Tempe wipes him away with her apron. "But he loves you like a daddy," she says quietly, "and that's what matters. Things is going to change, Grace. The good Lord don't care about us," I say. Aunt Tempe shakes her head. "You can't blame the good Lord for what people do. Thinking like that will make your mind crazy. Things will change, Grace, maybe even sooner and later. But till they do, things won't change lest we change them," I say, angry at Aunt Tempe for just accepting things the way they is. "It's not fair," I say, and all the thoughts what's been piling in my head tumble out. Why can't she polish her own silver? Why can't she bake her own muffins? Why do grown folks need help getting dressed? I finish scooping squash and turn my eyes from the ragged chicken Aunt Tempe keeps dipping in the pot. "Even Thomas and Willie dress themselves, and they's just toddlers. Willie's only had but 2 birthdays, and Thomas is even younger." Aunt Tempe plucks a feather, nods to herself, and pulls the chicken from the pot. I know she's listening to me, but she keeps her mouth closed and lets me babble. Just talking about Thomas and Willie makes me miss them even more. Feels like they's right in the kitchen with me. Not just some ghosty thoughts what ramble in my mind. Sometimes Willie walks round with his gown stuck on his head, wobbling and bumping into things, but that's just pretend. That's just Willie being silly, to make folks laugh. Willie knows how to dress himself, sure as the sun knows how to shine. Aunt Tempy goes right on patting the chicken dry without saying a word to me. "Don't you care?" I ask. "Don't you care that Anna got sent to the smokehouse because grown people can't find their own bedpan or even dress themselves?" "The only dressing we need to worry about is this here chicken," Aunt Tempy says. "Start plucking." My blood boils hotter than burnt pudding, but Aunt Tempy just starts chopping oysters and humming soft to herself. I won't even look at her. How can she not care? The missus comes back from church and takes to her bed because Master's brother and his new wife Charlotte is coming for a late supper. I hear her telling Anna, "Rest makes a body strong," and I feel like choking. Slaves hardly ever rest, and we stronger than Master Allen and the missus put together. While we polish the silver, Aunt Tempy tells me whenever guests visit, Master Allen asks Jordan to serve with his eyes blindfolded. I'm still mad, so I pretend I don't hear Aunt Tempy talking. Aunt Tempy pretends she don't notice me ignoring her. "Master Allen ties a white rag round Jordan's eyes," she says. The silver's bright enough to chase the stars away, but I pretend there's a tarnished spot, what's taken all my concentration. That evening, Aunt Tempy lets me peek through the keyhole. "Jordan, show my brother and his wife how well you serve," Master Allen says. Jordan places the plates in all the right places without knocking anything over. Then he steps back. Master Allen laughs. "What about our water?" I worry what might happen, but Jordan turns to the table behind him, reaches for the silver pitcher, and pours water in every glass. He don't spill a drop. The missus claps, and Master's brother laughs, but his wife just looks down. Master Allen starts eating with his chest puffed out like an overstuffed pastry. "You may remove the blindfold, Jordan," he finally says. Jordan steps back again and unties the blindfold. His face is set like stone, and his eyes empty as glass. I wonder what thoughts is running through his mind, but seems even without a blindfold, Jordan's wearing a mask. Later that night, Jordan's still standing by the side table, waiting on Master Allen and his brother while they smoking pipes and drinking brandy. Uncle Moses, Aunt Tempy, Anna, and me is eating leftover dumplings and worrying about Jordan. The missus comes into the kitchen with Miss Charlotte and starts showing off the turtle-shaped warming oven what's built into the wall. Anna jumps up, and the pitcher what's sitting in the middle of the table tips over. Cider seeps through the cracks and onto the floor. "Clean it up, Anna," the missus says sweetly. "We'll deal with this when our guests leave." Anna's wide, frightened eyes break open the tinderbox what's keeping my dangerous thoughts bound up tight inside me. "In the smokehouse?" I whisper. Soon as my words escape, "I'm sorry." The missus shoots me an evil, threatening snarl, what makes my readiness wither to ash. I'm trembling inside, but before the missus can say anything, Miss Charlotte asks me my name. "Grace," I choke out. "Grace, what a lovely name," Miss Charlotte says, "and what pretty eyes you have." She turns to Anna. "Accidents happen. Why, just yesterday, I spilled cream all over my new tablecloth." The missus can't do nothing but smile when Charlotte adds, "What lovely helpers you have, Gertrude." The missus and Charlotte leave, and Anna and Moses follow after them. I'm already feeling like a pile of tobacco worms is hatching in my stomach when I hear the missus interrupt Miss Charlotte's sweet chattering. "Oh, excuse me, Charlotte. I forgot to remind Tempy about your husband's fondness for blackberries," the missus says in a high, sweet, silvery voice I never heard her use before. "Anna, show Miss Charlotte into the parlor. I'll be with you in a moment." I hear the shuffle of the missus's cloth shoes and the swish of her circle dress turning in the walkway. Aunt Tempy looks at me with knowing eyes, that signal me to keep mine down. The missus comes into the kitchen and stands so close to me, I smell her oyster breath. She takes the dish I'm clearing and gives it to Aunt Tempy. Ghosty cold fingers brush my shaking hands, and I stare at the floor. "That's right," she hisses. "You keep those eyes down. Perhaps you think your pale skin gives you the right to speak your mind. But my dear, haughty child, you are nothing but a slave who needs to learn her place." A smile dances between her words. "And since you are so interested in the smokehouse, I'll be sure to send you there when my guests leave." She turns to Aunt Tempy, and with her strange new silvery voice says, "Tempy, add blackberry cobbler and fresh cream to the breakfast menu. I'm sure Grace won't mind gathering berries in the dark. I don't believe bears will be foraging this late." A chilling fear wraps round my bones and chokes my breath. I don't look up till I hear the missus' cloth shoes clomp in the hallway. Jordan finally comes inside, and I can tell by his pitiful look he was listening at the door. "Nothing but misery in a corset," Aunt Tempy whispers. "Come with me, Grace," Jordan says. "There's some blackberry bushes just beyond the stable." He looks at Aunt Tempy. "I'll eat when I get back." Aunt Tempy nods and gives me a basket. "I'll take care of the cleanup. Half a basket's all I need. Don't press the berries down." I take the basket and follow Jordan out the door. My whole body's shaken, and a cold dread chokes my rattiness voice silent. It's dark outside, and the sky's got a ripple of white clouds what's covering the stars. Each step away from the house yard, my breathing gets easier, but my words is still withering like smoke. Jordan's quiet, too. The only sounds is the rustle of our feet and the chilly, shrilly chirps of lonesome crickets and tree frogs calling for mates. I once heard old George Cooper tell Uncle Jim that fear's got a way of creeping inside a grown man, stealing his voice and strangling his soul. Fear's got my voice, but for Mama's sake, I'm trying hard to hold on to my soul. The sky above the stable is clear of clouds, and the moon casts a dusty light. A line of scraggly bushes lean against the stable wall. Jordan stomps the ground. "Don't think we'll see a bear, but maybe a rattler," he says. He waits a moment, just listening, then reaches deep into the middle branches. "Lots of thorns," he says, "but lots of berries, too. You hold the basket. This won't take long." When the basket's about half full, he stops. "Now you reach in and take a few. The thorns will scratch. But if the missus doesn't see scrapes on your hands, she'll wonder why."
"What about the scratches on your hands?" I ask.
"When the missus sees them, she'll know you helped me."
"Hidden by the white gloves they make me wear," Jordan says, almost smiling. "You've got to beat 'em at their own game."
"Thanks for helping me," I say, in a whispery voice, what don't even sound like mine. Jordan nods.
"I've got my own baby girl, younger than you. I hope if she's ever in trouble, someone will be there to help her."
Jordan's voice is low and sad. "I hope so too," I whisper, and a little of my fear melts into sorrow. The next day, the missus comes into the kitchen early, early. The ghosty dread what's been following me everywhere keeps me from looking up.
"Tempy, is that the blackberry cobbler? It smells divine."
The missus walks round the kitchen sniffing and snooping till she's standing right over me.
"Good morning, Grace," she says cheerfully. "I trust there were no bears in the blackberry patch. But oh dear, look at those scratches."
I clamp my mouth shut.
"They do look like they hurt, though certainly not as much as a whipping."
The missus takes the salt jar what's sitting on the table, sprinkles my hands, and smiles.
"I believe salt prevents infections. Go ahead, Grace. Rub in the salt."
I rub the salt
gentle as I can, while the missus watches.
Well, I best get back to my guests. She looks at Aunt Tempy. I cannot wait to taste that cobbler.
My hand burns and stings, but still I'm happy. I didn't let a single cry escape. The scratches on my hands make everything more painful, and I wonder if Jordan's suffering too.
He's got wounds much worse than blackberry scratches, Aunt Tempy says. Maybe now you'll learn to keep your mouth closed.
Aunt Tempy's words start my huffiness simmering again. How come she don't care? She even sends me back to the blackberry bushes.
Best to keep Master happy, she says, stirring sugar and fresh blackberries into boiling water. Going to send his brother home with a jar of our best blackberry syrup.
Aunt Tempy knows the missus is mean. She knows Master Allen don't care about us. Why does she care about making them happy? Even if fear steals my soul, I'm never going to coddle grown people what's got no sense of kindness. The next day, when Miss Charlotte and her husband finally leave, the missus gets one of her headaches. Your mama must be praying for you, Aunt Tempy says. Thought for sure you'd be going to the smokehouse. I thought so too, and wonder why the good Lord listens to some prayers and not others. Still, there's a trembling inside me what'll never go away as long as I'm living at the big house. Ever since Jordan walked with me to the blackberry bush, I've been thinking about his little girl and wondering what she looks like. I wonder if she's got pale skin like Jordan, and if she'll pretend to be white like he did. When my arms ache from turning sour milk to butter, I wonder what it's like to do nothing but sit on soft chairs, to wait and be served muffins or taters smothered in the fresh butter someone else churned. One night, before we go to bed, I ask Aunt Tempy if she thinks I could pass for white. My skin's even lighter than Jordan's.
You sure could, Aunt Tempy says. But you best not get any ideas in that pretty little head of yours. Passing for white's as dangerous as following the star.
I don't know what following the star means, so Aunt Tempy takes me outside. She points to the dark sky.
See them stars, what look like my soup ladle? She whispers. They's pointing north. They's pointing to freedom.
Aunt Tempy puts her arms on my shoulders. There's a whole beautiful world out there, Grace. The good Lord made it for everybody. Then why, I wonder, do you work so hard just to please Master Allen? Why does Jordan have a baby girl he's never going to see again? But I keep these thoughts tucked, private in my mind. We go back inside and climb into our beds. Soon as Aunt Tempy lays herself down, she's deep asleep and snoring. I lay awake a long time, thinking about the place called freedom. I figure it must be somewhere near heaven. Mama says heaven's behind the clouds, and it looks to me like the ladle star points in the same direction. Don't know much about freedom, but I do know a lot about heaven. In heaven, Mama says, the good Lord loves everybody, no matter what color they's painted. In heaven, the good Lord won't allow nobody to take a mama's child or threaten to whip her because she don't like weevils hiding in the carrots or she accidentally spills cider on the kitchen floor. In heaven, Jordan's baby girl will be sitting on his shoulders, reaching for the moon. Seems freedom must be right round the corner from heaven. I fall asleep jumping from star to star, pretending I'm on my way to freedom and hoping I wake up there.